Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 27th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We are going to make a lot of mistakes on this show today. And we're not going to do it intentionally. It's just not easy to do when you're just talking about it. There are some things where we knew what we were saying, but we weren't sure it was right.
That's every show.
I know, it's true.
This show, it was all compacted one, and I'll pause here to remind our listeners that we are in show number 2 of our classic recaps of the Ante Up PokerCast while Chris is in Europe. So we're going to talk about a classic episode and play it for you again. And I think this brings classic to a whole new
classic.
Not classic as in that cherry Chevy that Grandpa gave you. This is classic in what a classic.
You know, one of the things I think of is, you know, when they have these horrible, horrible movies, and they're just horrible, yet for some reason you find yourself watching it because it happened
off
when you were 14 and you can't turn it off. You can't look away like in an accident. And if you haven't figured it out already, yes, this is Pod Odds.
The infamous Pod Odds.
Infamous. We recorded this October 5th, 2005, so really it was only a few months after our first show, so what were we thinking? Trying to tackle something we didn't even understand ourselves. And even to this day, like, I understand them. I just can't teach them. And that's another reason why we're more of a feel, like, tandem than we are a mathematical. And I know people are going to skewer us for that, but you know what I mean by that. It's like, I look at the pot size, I look at my stack, I think about how hard it is to hit the hand I'm trying to hit, and I call or I fold. And that's just all there is to it, because it's just not the minutia of the pot odd number to me. It just, and I never, you know, you talk about, okay, you got two cards to come, and it doesn't make sense to me, because once that card comes, all the odds, it didn't make sense. And even today, I'm still hacking it. You know, it's crazy.
Well, it's one of these things where we, you know, we still do a lot of teaching, right? On our cruises, we still do classes, and occasionally we're asked to teach other. And I love that. It's fun, because I love teaching the game to people, particularly our one-on-one classes and things like that. But I also know what I'm not comfortable talking about, so I try to always steer the classes away from the stuff that I can't really answer.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things, pod odds. You're right. I get the general concept. I get that. I understand what it is. I understand the kind of the basic math of it. But to teach somebody it with authority, even now, 9 years later, I'm not comfortable doing. So it's hilarious that we tackled this 4 weeks, 4 months into, or less than 4 months into this brazen new Ante Up PokerCast thing that we're trying to do. And it was brutal. And, you know, because we talked about, obviously a lot of people said that they wanted to hear the show, and I'm sure that they just wanted to make fun of us, which is great. And so we talked about what show is going on, and I think we agree we got to put this on. What I like about it is, you know, from the very beginning, we've always told people we are not professional players.
Right.
We're probably never going to be professional players. We're just the idiots that you hang out with in your home game and just talking about it. So take it for what it is. So this show clearly demonstrates that, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I like about it is that we don't mind making fun of ourselves and our mistakes. You know, I've kind of started a cottage industry of mispronouncing words that continues to this day. And, you know, if we were really worried about that, we would stop and re-record and clean it up and make it this super professional, you know, awesome thing, and that's never been what I wanted to do. I always wanted to be real.
Yeah.
And so I don't enjoy making mistakes and putting out bad information as we did in this show, and that's a disclaimer when you listen to this. Don't listen to it for any kind of factual information whatsoever. So there's a difference between that, but, you know, we're just, you know, trip over our words or say something silly or stupid. That's I'm fine with that. And if we're walking down the halls of the Rio and people, hey, those are those idiots that talk about poker. I know nothing about it. I love that.
That's why the intro to the show, he says, who think they know how to play poker, because it's true. I mean, and the other thing, too, is two things I want to take away from this. One, clearly, you and I did not go to each other and say, hey, what are we doing for a show this week? I think we should do Pod Odds because we grasp it so well. That's not what it was, because you have to remember, we were a show. When we first started, we thought, all right, we need to make this show, because we're at the Times, so we need to make it something where we're teaching them something, because every time you pick up the newspaper, you're learning something. You're learning about what happened during the day, current events, whatever it is. So we felt like we need to be educational, which is why you'll see a lot of our shows are like, you know, top five things, or when it first started.
Ace King.
Ace King, or how to play Queens, and stuff like that, because we were trying to be educational.
Also trying to allow us to keep doing it, because you know, it's such an innovative thing for the newspaper to do, and particularly at a newspaper that didn't really have a history ever of innovation.
Right.
And the last thing we wanted our bosses to say, hey, are those guys up there just yapping about their home game this weekend? That's not doing anything for us, right? So it's got to be something that we can go and say, hey, we're teaching people.
And it was funny, because there was a point where, and it might have been when we got the first award, or when they got the first numbers from iTunes and found out 10,000 of our shows got downloaded that month or something. But there was a point where it's kind of like, and I love to bring this up, Rush. When Rush was early in their career, people hated him. Even their own people who signed him to deals hated him. And they decided, when they came out with the album 2112, they said, we're just going to do it our way, and we're going to tell them to go screw. Because they wanted them to come up with a bunch of catchy short songs they could put on the radio. And they said, you know what, we're going to do the exact opposite. We're going to come up with a song that's 20 minutes long, and we're going to tell a story, and no one can play it on the radio, and we don't care. And they did what they wanted to do, and the album was huge. It went platinum, blah, blah, blah. And then from that moment on, they couldn't say anything to them about what they were going to do for music or whatever. And so this was not that moment for us. We did this show thinking that, okay, we had to keep the show going. But once they found out our numbers, and then we had this, and remember, we had this sort of knack for, on the blog, for getting like 50 or 60 comments, and the web guys loved that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Once we got to that point, then it didn't matter what our show was. We were just trying to come up with episodes, and they weren't going to stop us. They built us, literally, us and Steve Spears.
Yep.
They built us a studio, a professional studio for these two shows, essentially. So at that point, we knew we could do whatever we wanted. But this show was not one of them. I think it came from one of the listeners saying, you know, I really don't, I'm glad you guys are teaching us things, and I don't get this Pod Odds thing. Could you guys do a show about that? And you and I looked at each other like, we have no other idea. Let's just do it, and we'll read up on it. And I think we went to, what was it, Phil?
We didn't go anywhere. So this is kind of my recollection of this show, is that, well, what I kind of like to say about this is, we've been in business together 6 years. We've known each other for 10 or 11 now, right?
Right, right.
Doing the show for 9. And, people like to say that, a business partner is like a spouse, right?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of similarities, but the one difference is, what's the one thing that spouses fight about more often than anything else, right? Money, right?
Yeah, money.
And business partners, that's all we have to. Right. We're not making money, we're not in business, right?
Right.
So I think it's been very fortunate that you and I have only had one or two or three big blow-ups in 6 years.
Right.
And, a couple other little skirmishes and stuff. But I think going all the way back to this show is a reminder of just how we were kind of working out our relationship at the time. So I remember, and maybe I'm wrong, but I remember you coming, hey, let's do Pod Odds. And I'll be like, I don't really know that, but I didn't really have a better idea. And I'm like, okay, we'll do it. So I read something somewhere, and maybe it's what you're talking about too, and completely didn't understand it at all. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll just get on here and wing it, right? What's the worst thing that could happen? Well, the worst thing that could happened. We had no idea what we were doing. And I remember specifically when we got done with the show, I'll never forget this. We got done with that show, and I stared at you, and you stared at me, and I'm like, I told you we shouldn't have done that. And you're like, no, you didn't say that. And I'm like, I should have told you that.
I think it was Phil Gordon's book or something that I learned about. It was a 2-4 rule or something about after the flop and all that crap. And you just you.
Oh man, that's what really threw me off, because they're like, oh no, but it's two because of this or whatever you're speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're speaking Swahili at that point, and I'm like, okay.
So, I mean, at that point, when you don't even believe what you're talking about, it's hard to sell it. So, I think that's what the big thing was. I was talking about Phil Gordon's 4-2 rule or 2-4 rule or whatever you want to call it, and it was like, oh, and even now, I mean, we're still butchering it now, talking about it, trying to remember it.
Absolutely.
It was absolutely a brutal thing. And, you know, I get pot odds, I get the size of the pot and all that stuff when I'm playing. I don't need to do the minutiae. I figure it out, and I think it's worth it or not, and that's all there is to it. So we're never going to know how to do pot odds properly. So I guess with that, we're going to launch into the show. This is from October 5th, 2005, Pot Odds.
Yes, welcome back to Annie Up, our weekly poker podcast, coming to you from the offices of St. Petersburg Times and TBT. This is show 17. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, 17 shows, we're almost legal, man.
Almost.
And there's nothing really witty to say about 17, so we're going to do so many shows, though, we're going to need to start volume and yeah. Indexing these.
We'll come
soon.
Up with something witty for 117. How's that?
You and I have been having conversations here at work about our semi-weekly home game.
Yes.
And I've been getting kind of frustrated, and it's not that... I'm frustrated with the games that we play or anything, but I've been noticing that we play 5 games, and for our listeners and readers for your column, the games that we play are, we play 2-4 Limit and Crazy Pineapple, which some people don't know what that is, but we'll explain that if we need to. Double Flop now, which we introduced.
Added this week, yeah.
Which is fun. And then we'll get into Omaha High, and then a No Limit Hold'em game at the end.
Right.
And, of course, my specialty as I put my fingers in the air and do the quotation marks, is the No Limit aspect of Hold'em. And then I also like Omaha High. But what I'm finding is I'm playing 3 or 4 players who love to play Limit and are good at it, and I'm kind of getting better, I guess. But I'm finding myself to be almost, you know, half my stack by the time I get to the games that I enjoy.
Right.
And I'm not whining. I'm just wondering, you know, when am I going to get some love, you know? And so we're trying to figure out a way that we can, you know, satisfy everyone in the game. And I think maybe it's our time ratio that we're doing it with. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. Maybe we should be doing dealer choice
or something like that. Yeah.
Which sounds like my grandmother's game. but, you know, what do you think? Have you given us any thought about maybe making us all happy at one time?
Well, yeah. I mean, certainly we've been playing this game for about 3 or 4 years, and obviously you've joined it recently.
Right.
So it's always been a challenge to keep a game going. And actually, I think the reason we kind of brought it up today is to get some feedback from our listeners on whether they're having troubles with their home game, whether their home games are going well, if they've encountered these kind of speed bumps and overcome them, or if it's crash and burn the game. And a little history of our home game, we started with some very active players, and we were playing strictly Limit, mm-hmm. and at higher limits than we were now. But sadly, 4 of our key players moved away, and we've kind of patchworked replacements in, and so we've done all kinds of things to kind of keep the interest, because the bottom line for me, though, is getting people at the table.
Yeah.
You know, it's no fun playing. I mean, there's a certain amount of fun to playing 2 or 3-handed, but, you know, you want to have a game with lots of people and lots of money in there and lots of things going on. So, you know, so we've switched days, we lowered the limits, we've gone to an all-tournament format for a while.
Right.
Now we're playing in the afternoon, and we've added new games, and, you know, it seems that everything works for a couple months, and then we have another problem. So... So the problem I think we're dealing with here, and again, I'm interested in if listeners have the same problem, is we have people that only want to play certain games. So how do you structure it to get maximum participation? You know, because let's say we pick some of the games that some of the players don't want to play and play them first. what's their incentive for coming at all then?
Right. I
mean, do they come later?
And I'm right now in that position.
Exactly.
I mean, I do want to get better, and that's why I'm sacrificing a lot of my bankroll early so I can get better at limit, so I can go down and take advantage of, you know, people who don't really understand the game. Maybe I can win money that way. So I'm trying to be a better poker player, and that's why I'm doing this. But at the same time, what if I showed up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon instead of noon and skipped the first three games that I don't like and then sat down with Omaha with my full bankroll and then cleaned everybody out?
Right.
Or I'm not saying that would happen, but what if that did happen? There'd be a lot of resentment. And then vice versa, the people who are showing up just for their games and then leaving when I'm down $50 or whatever amount of money I'm down, and now I want to play my favorite game, and they're gone with my money, and I can't get it back.
Can't get it back, yeah.
So
it's certainly frustrating. It is very frustrating. And I guess the ultimate solution is to find people that are just serious about playing everything. And, but we're just not in that position right now. Hopefully, you know.
Or
I think we pounce on everybody that we meet. Any new employees here? We're first one there to greet them to the.
Oh, you know how to pronounce the word poker? Would you like to get in our home game? I think maybe too a solution might be that we all agree on a game that we will all play for. You know, like our five games that we all agree that we will play if they come up, then we do a dealer's choice or we draw, you know, we put five cards out, say, okay, the Ace of Diamonds is the Omaha or whatever, and then we draw the game. And maybe the solution, I think a lot of people who don't want to play no limit with us is because the amount of money they can lose.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we change it to pot limit so that, you know, they could just fold a hand and not worry about it. Or if they get involved in a hand, you know, they're really just going to lose the pot at that point, you know, or whatever. So, maybe we alter it that way, but I would be interested in listening to what our listeners have to say, you know, and I really like for them to email us or call us on our 800 number.
Yeah, what's that number again?
Well, the 800 number is 866-371-9605. It's toll-free. It won't cost you anything, so you can save your money for our game. You know?
and you can also email
us. And then you can email us too at poker@tampabay.com. Yes. So, you know, how do you play your home game? I would really like to know, get some information. Or even, you know, if you see one of our items on the blog and you want to just type it in there, you know, go to our blog. It's at tampabay.com and just click on the either keyword poker or click on the item in the middle of the page. All right, so now we're going to go on to our main topic. And this is a topic that, as we sat here and discussed it before the show, it still is quite confusing. And it's called pot odds. I know that as a no-limit player, pot odds don't usually dictate my entire play.
Absolutely.
I play a lot by feel, and I think you do too, even though you don't always play no-limit. I think you play by feel too.
Right. And there's lots of players that do that. I mean, in the World Series Poker Circuit events this year, we heard Jennifer Harmon talk about, you know, how she doesn't really get into that very much.
Yeah.
She's a very much a feel player too.
Yeah.
But it's important to understand the pot odds, I think.
Sure.
As I still don't completely understand it myself. part of the thing that just drives me crazy about pot odds is, you know, if I understood math and I was good at math, I would have never became a journalist.
That's right.
I would have had a job where I could actually make some money. So it's fitting now that I have latched onto a hobby that I really love that requires me to know math. So,
and you know what, too, is you're always watching on TV, and whenever they do those little segments interviewing the player always has a PhD in mathematics from Harvard or, you know, and it's like, oh my God, what am I doing? I'm an idiot. Why am I playing with these geniuses, you know? But if you can grasp the concept of pot odds and, in your mind, always make the proper play, you have to come out ahead in the sense that, unless a miracle card beats you once in a while, if you're getting... And what we'll do is we'll define everything. But if you're getting, you know, 25% on your money, like say there was, I guess, $100 in the pot and you only had to make a $10 call, you know, you're getting 90% on your money to make a draw at a card that you have a much better percentage of.
Exactly.
So that was a very vague way of describing it. But now I'll get more into specifics. The definition of pot odds, and this is how we've, our consensus of reading through books and talking to people. And it's the ratio of the money that's in the pot versus what it costs you to call that bet. So an example would be there's $12 in the pot and the bet is $4. So in this case, you're getting 3-1 on your money. So for $4, you'll win 12. Okay. So you're getting 3-1 on your money. Now, why is that important? Well, let's say you have a flush draw, okay? And a flush draw, what we mean by a draw is the next card could give you a flush. So you have two diamonds in your hand. There are two diamonds on the board. You're convinced that if you make the flush, it will be the winning hand. If you have the ace of diamonds, you know that you're going to have the best hand unless a straight flush is possible. So now you have to count the cards that will give you a winning hand. At this point, you have two cards that you know in your hand and the three cards that are on the board. So you know five of the 52 cards. You know what they are, which leaves 47 unseen cards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So at that point, if you count your outs, okay, and what we mean by outs is winning cards, you have, at that point, nine cards because there are 13 cards in each suit.
Right.
You have 13 cards total in diamonds. You know that there are four right there out, which means you have nine left. So nine of the 47 unseen cards, okay, will give you a win. When you convert that into a percentage, you break it down roughly, nine in the 47. So you would do it, it's roughly one in five, mm-hmm. okay? But at this point, you have two cards to come. So it's a borderline call with only one card to come, but with two cards to come, you know, you're looking at, you take that percentage and then you multiply it by two, that percentage, which would give you roughly, the odds would roughly be about 8 to 1 or whatever it is. But in this instance, it's safe to call that bet because you're getting better money than what it's required to bet. So here, let's look at a perfect example. You hold four of diamonds, eight of diamonds, and the board comes up seven of diamonds, ace of diamonds, six of clubs. Okay, so that's your first scenario. Now, a king of hearts falls. You have four diamonds that you know of, okay, which can make you a flush. And then at this point now, you look at your hand, you have the four, the eight, the seven, and the six. So you've also picked up a gut shot straight draw. Mm-hmm. And what we mean by gut shot is a card in the middle of those cards can give you a straight. So that gives you three more outs, three more fives. You don't count the fourth five because it's a diamond. You've already counted that. So now at this point, you have 12 outs. Now you know four more, so you know one more card, so that's six total cards. So now you know there's 46 cards you don't know, but you have 12 outs. 12 outs of 46, that gives you a 26.1% chance to hit your winning hand because you do the math, 26.1. So if you had the same scenario where there was a $12 out there and the bet was four, it's only cost, you know, you're getting 25% on your money. So you're definitely getting better odds to call there by at least 1.1%. Now, this is really technical, and a lot of it can be boiled down to a quick way to figure out your percentages, right?
Sure.
And there are some varying theories on this, and I think that you and I have discussed this. I guess it was Krieger who says, okay, you take the amount of outs, multiply it by two, and add two, and then that's how you find out your rough percentage.
Right.
But is that with one card or two cards to come? I think he even says it's two cards to come, which would be correct, except you have to remember that you're getting that twice. So in this instance, if we did his theory, we'd have 12 cards left, 12 cards that'll give us a win, with one card to come after that King of Hearts came on a turn. So we'd multiply it by two, that would be 24, and if you add two, it'd be 26. That's exactly what we just said, 26.1%. So it's a real quick way to figure out your pot odds and whether or not you should call or not. And if you're online, it's kind of difficult. You really got to memorize these things and just say, boom, it's worth it,
yeah.
Which is why I always play by feel, maybe because of the online thing where you don't have a long time to do all these.
Yeah, you get very short amount of time to make that decision.
Yeah.
Though, online, I found a couple things that help you with making this decision online, even though you only have a little bit of time, is the fact that the actual most sites, the actual pot is displayed on the screen right there for you.
Yeah.
So there's no guessing about what's in the pot. There's no, you know, if you're in a brick and mortar casino or a live one, I mean, you're looking at a big stack of chips in the middle of the pot. So
that's right.
You either had to have kept track of how much is in there as you go on, or kind of guesstimate just by looking at the size of the stack. But online, you have the actual hard numbers there. So
yeah.
It depends on how quickly you can make that calculation.
and each one, just like you said, each one offers their own positives. I mean, if you're at a brick and mortar, okay, you can't see how much, you can see how much is in the pot, but you don't know, but you have more time to decide.
Exactly.
So you can try to figure it out. Online, that's probably why they give you the totals, so that you can just go, boom, okay, there's $50 in the pot, I only have to call 10, 5-to-1 odds, or, you know, whatever. So it's definitely something worth memorizing. And quick things are like, if you have an open-ended straight draw, and by open-ended we mean four cards in a row to a straight, you have 8 outs. You have the four cards at the bottom and the four cards in the top that you think, and you have to make sure that you're going to win the hand. I mean, yeah. If the board is paired, you know, you may not win that hand. You may lose to a full house, you know.
Right, and using the same concept, too, when we're talking about a flush draw, too, you're talking about a nut flush draw, too.
Yes, that's right.
If you've got 2-3 of hearts and there are 2 hearts on the board, and no twos or the threes or no straight draw possibilities to you. I mean, you still have the same amount of outs as someone with ace king of hearts, but if you hit a heart and somebody else has 2 hearts,
they're going to have a better flush.
Do good. So
there's some intelligence involved in here too. You have to have common sense when you're thinking about how to play the hand. But roughly, we're thinking, you know, maybe you're playing two-handed at that point or something of that nature, or whatever, you know, or somebody drops out and there's still enough money in the pot and you're still heads up. Yeah, you have to give it a lot of thought, but generally, all right, we could change that scenario instead of 4 and 8 of diamonds to ace 3 of diamonds. Then right. You know you got the nut flush, whatever it is. But you wouldn't have picked up the straight draw there either. So
exactly.
And knowing your outs is very important too. Knowing what, you know, sometimes you backdoor into a better hand, and by backdoor I mean you were playing for one hand and you got runner the last two cards. Fit in perfectly to give you a better hand. So you have to know your outs as well. You may have picked up more outs after that turn and not even realize it. So paying attention to the board and not being so focused on the outs of the initial hand you're hoping to hit. You know, there are a lot of intangibles here that you have to remember.
So a quick summary. I think what you need to figure out pot odds, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is you need to know how many outs you have.
Uh-huh.
You need to have a reasonable assumption of what's in the pot.
Right.
The more exact, the better. And then I think also you need to put some of your opponents on hands to know what they have, because right. That adjusts how many outs you have.
That's
and
right.
You can't just go by, you know, the number of cards left, and that you need to, I mean, this, you're drawing to a winning hand is
that's
what
right.
You're trying to do.
Right. And in our instance, there was a 7 of diamonds, an ace of diamonds, and a 6 of clubs on the flop. Somebody bets out into you. You have to put them on a hand there. You have to think, okay, what can I beat with a flush? Well, at this point, I can beat trip aces. Mm-hmm. I can beat ace king, which is to pair with the top kicker. I could even beat a set at this point, 7s or 6s, as long as the board doesn't pair again. I can still beat that hand. So I'm drawing to the best hand at this point. And that's right. You have to be able to put people on hands or roughly what you think they're playing at. You know, I mean, they could be playing for the same thing, and you're in trouble if you don't have the nuts. So I absolutely agree. If someone's betting hard into you, you think they're trying to take the pot down now or build the pot, hoping that, you know, making you pay for your draw, you recognize that as well. Just like if you're on the other end of it, you have to recognize that these people are drawing and you have to make them pay. So, yeah, you have to put them on hands and then go with that read.
And another thing that's problematic, too, is obviously pot odds are more perfect in your math when you're heads up.
Yes.
If you have more players left to act after you, you get now, on top of everything else you've already figured out, you have to guesstimate on what they're going to do.
Yes.
Whether they're going to come into the pot, whether they're going to raise it, and if they raise it, will somebody re-raise it? And so there's lots of other things involved in there in a big pot.
And that's tough.
Very tough.
Tough to calculate, too. Because you're like, okay, now one guy came in. Another guy came in. Oh, he raised. Now, you know, oh, my God, do I have to call again? And it's tough. And I think these pot odds really come into play in limit, not so much in no limit. And I think there will be people who will disagree with that. But the no limit portion is the implied odds. And just before we get to that, I wanted to say the quick ways when we said before how you'd multiply by 2 and add 2. I've read in a few different spots and including books that when you have a flop, the way you figure out your percentage is you multiply by 4 and add 2 to give you a rough estimate, because if you only did it for one, you have 2 cards coming. If you only said, I only have a 10% chance to win this hand, well, you have it twice. So twice is 20%. So to get it quick is to multiply it by 4. Some people may agree, some people may disagree. They may say, well, each card, it's still, you know, like when they say roulette, you know, right. You roll, it's 50%, you know, that it's going to hit red or black or whatever. Okay, but really, you still have 2 cards to come. And so you have to think, okay, it's actually 20% that I'm going to make my hand by the end rather than 10. On the next card, sure, it's 10% on the next card. But by the end of the hand, it's 20%. So how I would figure it is you take your outs, multiply by four, and add two, and that's roughly the percentage that you have to be getting laid or better from the pot to make that bet. And that's you know, and if you need more information, you know, email us and we'll get more. We'll give you books to read, you know, or whatever, or even websites to check out. But
absolutely,
it's just a real
quick
thing.
Lots of resources out there.
And of course this goes into implied odds, and implied odds basically means what you think you can win on the next card if you make your hand.
Right.
And so that makes it easier to call those borderline hands where, say, you're getting 3-1 on your money, but you only have a 2.8% chance, you know, or 2.8-1 chance to make your hand. Okay, at this point, I should fold, but if I make my hand, I'm believing that, say I'm winning a hand with you, I'm believing that Scott is going to put in another $6 bet on the river. You add that $6 to the pot before you make your decision and say, okay, now the odds are proper, mm-hmm. because what I'm going to get paid once I make my hand. And implied odds are, you know, and then there's reverse implied odds, you know, should I put the money out there because I think he's not going to make his hand, you know. There are a lot of confusing things, but basically implied odds comes into play a lot in no limit and pot limit games because there's so much money to be made there, whereas in limit it's just one more bet. And so it's a very confusing thing, but it's something we felt that we need to bring up because we don't want you out there just calling hands randomly because you got a gut shot. You
exactly.
know, a gut shot on the next card, if you, you know, again, a gut shot is when you have just one card that'll make it straight for you. It's 11-1 that you're going to hit it, you know, 11-1. If you have to put a, you know, a $4 bet into a $12 pot, you are not getting the right pot odds to call that. And you're going to come out on the losing end all the time, you know, because if you do that all the time,
in the long run, you
the
will.
Long run, your money will you will definitely be drained.
Now, another thing too, I think we're talking about figuring out our own pot odds and whether we should call or not. But I think what separates the good poker players from the very good poker players is understanding what the other player is thinking as their pot odds are, so you can decide how much you need to bet.
Yes,
and obviously this is you know, not much of an issue in limit, but right. in no limit. You need to figure out, you need to put that bet out there that is just enough that someone's not going to take it for a free card,
yep.
but not so much that you're giving them the proper pot odds to call, too, which, you know, again, very complicated stuff. But if you can master that, you're going to do pretty well.
And that's so right. And the other thing, too, is if you give someone a free card, you're giving them infinite outs,
yep.
your infinite odds, because they don't have to put any money in. So you're giving them a free card to hit their free hand, you know. So you always have to think, okay, this guy's drawn. I got a bet. Okay, I'm drawn. Do I call? You know, and then like you said, in no limit, absolutely. I think we talked about this. It was the week before last, maybe, or the show before last, when I said I bet a little more than the pot on a hand because I didn't want him to have the proper odds to call. So I was convinced the guy was on a flush draw. I bet more than the pot, and he called anyway and didn't hit it, and I made a bunch of money, and that's why you do it. But that's exactly right, especially with no limit and pot limit. You want to bet. If you bet the pot, there's almost no hand, unless it's already made, there's no drawing hand that really would require you to call and make it correct, I would think, unless you're so well stacked and loose, you know, that, you know. But really, if someone's betting the pot at you, unless you have a made hand already, there's really no odds that a correctly can call. Now, you can be loose and make the call and hit the miracle card and whatever,
exactly.
but... So that's another thing to think about, you know, not just understanding pot odds, but understanding what they mean to other people, you know.
And then back on the limit, another thing I think is important, too, is this is further proof that when you have a big hand, big starting hand in limit, or you hit and you have your made hand on the flop, that you need to be very aggressive
yes.
and drive people out, not so much because you don't want them to draw, which obviously is part of it, but the more people in the pot, the more money is going to be in the pot, and then again, it's going to make it easier for people to have pot odds
yes,
to call.
That's right. And this sort of goes back to our monster hands last week, where if you got aces, you want to draw people. You know, you don't want people staying in the pot with you.
Right.
You want to push it.
Isolate.
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm not really sure we covered this as well as it could be, but again, our shows are limited.
Yeah, and we're only about 20 minutes here.
Yeah, so. and of course, there are so many resources out there that, you know, any one of the books will probably cover pot odds. And then the basic books will definitely. And you can go online, too. You know, Card Player Magazine has a great website, and they'll have articles on there and all kinds of websites, really. Yeah. And if you really want us to get into it more, I'll definitely, you know, if you email us and ask, we'll put something on the blog helping you out, pointing you to sites, giving you links or whatever. Because it's definitely important to know. But I think for players like you and me, I think we play a little more by feel than numbers.
Right. At the very least, I mean, if you can memorize just a general outline of what hands are going to hit when,
right?
At least then will help you a little bit narrow down some of the mistakes you're going to make.
Yeah.
You don't need to memorize everything. I don't think is what I'm saying.
Right. And a lot of times too, you'll see guys say, "Oh, now that he called, I have to call because I'm in the blind." You know, and even though one guy raised, everyone at the table called. Now you're getting like 15-1 on your money to start a hand. You got to call, you know. So, and even though you have, you know, 3-8 offsuit, you may have to call that hand just because you never know what the flop's going to bring. So, it's a good topic. And again, if you want any advice anymore, further, whatever, just send us an email at poker@tampabay.com. But I think now we need to go to our hand of the week.
That was a crazy game.
All right, so this is an interesting hand. It's actually a hand from the past.
Yeah, yes.
I think on our blog you clued us all into the World Series from 1997 going to be on with Stewie the Kid Unger, who we had been talked about on a show earlier.
He's on at the very accommodating time of 3 a.m. Sunday this week. Good thing we have TiVo.
That's right. I actually can't let go of the guy either. I've watched it like 3 times already, and even though you don't even see him that much in the telecast, but I'm just compelled by this man, and I just, my heart breaks that he did this to himself. And I mean, he was the greatest player of all time. Yeah. And it's just unbelievable, the story. But there was an interesting hand on there, and I thought that you were going to actually see it, but you've been so busy and had a chance, so this might actually be interesting.
Yes,
because
yes.
Now I can, you know, I'll tell you how the hand came down. And then you could tell me what you think he had, what's going on at this point. Stewie's the chip leader, and he's sitting across from a guy named Ron Stanley, who's in second in chips. And I got to tell you, when you watch this, you're just going to crack up at what Ron Stanley is wearing. This guy is just hysterical. What a character. He's got this big, big, bushy Grizzly Adams beard, right? These tan 70s glasses, stupid baseball cap on, and he's wearing like a tuxedo with tails with a big, poofy buff bow tie and sneakers, you know? I mean, come on, dude. You're going to be on national TV, you know? But anyway, so this guy goes in, and they had like a pre-interview with him, too, and he's like, yeah, I think that I'm going to do pretty well, and as long as I get heads up with Stewie. Yeah, right, buddy. All right, so he's on the small blind, and of course he has the pleasure of having Stu Unger sitting behind him in the big blind. At this point, the blinds were 5 and 10 grand, and there were some antes, but they didn't tell you that specific. It folds all the way around to Stanley. Ron Stanley, and he calls, and Stewie just checks, lets the flop come. The flop comes ace of spades, six of spades, nine of hearts. Okay, so now we're looking at two spades, two to a flush, two to a possible straight, whatever's going on there. Ron checks, and Stewie checks, which, oh my God, Stewie checking. You know, if you know anything about the way he plays, you're like, wow, he checked. At this point, the turn comes, and it's an eight of clubs. So it doesn't help the flush draw, but it gets someone closer to a straight. Ron bets out 25 grand. Stewie calls the 25 grand and raises 60 more.
Wow.
So at this point, you have to start putting people on hands at this point. And I'll just ask you, just in getting into that great poker mind of yours, and what are you thinking at this point? Why would Ron bet at this point, and why would Stu raise?
Well, I'm guessing one of them probably had an ace.
Okay.
And one probably was on some kind of draw. I'm guessing probably more a flush draw than a straight draw, but that would be my guess right now.
Okay, so at this point, we're thinking some guy's got one of the top pair, and the other guy's got a draw. Which one that is, it's hard to tell, because Stewie's so aggressive, and we don't really know much about Ron Stanley, the weird-dressed man. All right, so Ron actually calls that raise. That puts the pot at about 200 grand, okay? And these guys have, you know, roughly 1 million, and the other guy is roughly 700,000 or something like that. So it's not a huge dent, but it's a big pot.
Right.
The river is a king of diamonds. So now the board reads ace of spades, six of spades, nine of hearts, eight of clubs, king of diamonds. There is no straight flush draw, but there is still a straight draw, okay? Ron checks. and Stewie bets out $220,000. So roughly a pot-sized bet. At this point, you got to get inside Ron's head and think, what does Stewie have? What hands did he have? And what happened? So now, did he miss his flush draw? Did he make a straight and that $60,000 raise was a teaser to hopefully the guy would call and then make a big bet in the end? Did he hit a king at the end and think that was good enough? For $220,000 and it's on your head, what do you do there?
Well, at this point now, I guess what I'm thinking is Stanley was on the flush draw.
Okay.
Missed.
Okay.
And Stewie probably just picked up on the fact that he was on a flush draw. So he was pressing him on the turn and then knows that he missed it now. So now he puts in a huge bet that he knows that Ron can't call.
And so you think Stewie has anything and he's just bluffing? Or
he might
think
have something, but I think it's more of a big bluff.
More of a big bluff. Well, my friend, ding, 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 you are correct.
Oh, excellent.
Ron was not on a flush draw, though. Okay. He actually did hit the nine. He had 7-9 and folds.
Okay.
Stewie turns over, queen 10 offsuit. And it was a huge bluff, and you can see that once that 8 came, he made the typical super system big semi-bluff bet on the turn, and then when the river came, well, the raise, whatever he raised right. on the turn, but then when the river came and he missed it, he knew that the guy was weak, he didn't have an ace or a king in his hand, he just knew it, and put out that huge bet, and the guy bluffed. So there's something to be learned here in that if you are on a draw, and this goes back to our pot odds, too, kind of, because we're talking about playing draws. If you miss your draw, there's still always that chance to win the pot because the other person could have had a slow, small made hand or whatever.
Right.
You know, and there's a chance to force him out at the end. And he took advantage of that. He knew Ron was weak, and he came over the top of that huge pot-sized bet with a bluff. And it's funny because you listen to the commentators who, in this instance, were Phil Hellmuth and Gabe Kaplan.
Excellent combination.
And, yeah, and by the way, Gabe last night I watched on the World Series. Did you watch the World Series last night?
He's in
the
limit. No, not yet.
Yeah, so he's in the limit final table from last night, so I won't tell you anything else. But so at first, he actually puts Stewie on a range of four hands, and one of the hands he puts him on is queen 10. And I'm like, wow, I'm impressed, Gabe. You put him on the right hand. Then, after he had a few minutes to think about it, after that $220,000 bet, he goes, I put Stewie on a huge hand here. He's got to have a huge hand now. And then Phil Hellmuth's like, absolutely, he's got to have a huge hand. His one bet is more than three quarters of the table's chips combined. You know, so he's got to have a huge hand here, you know. And then he turns over queen 10. And it was just a thing of beauty, you know. And that just, it goes to show you that you don't have to have the cards, but you can't make a mindless bluff at the end either. There had to be some sort of rhyme or reason to his bet. And mm-hmm. he set it all up with that $60,000 raise, which came when the eight of clubs came and gave him a possible straight. And really, Ron only had two cards that were over his pair, and he still laid it down. You know, so it was an impressive hand. And then he went on to win the World Championship.
Exactly.
And
then sadly died next
year. Sadly died the next year. And it's unbelievable. The next year, he wasn't even there. I mean, yeah. It's just unbelievable. And then Gabe Kaplan made a really nasty, just low remark at the end of the interview. He's like, can I get that $600 you borrowed from me a couple years ago? That is just a low blow, dude. I mean, I know they're both from Brooklyn, they're both friends or whatever, but that is just a low blow. You know, they know what the guy's gone through. You know he went around and borrowing money from people and everything. You have to say that on national TV. No class, Gabe. Welcome back. No class. All right, well, anyway, that's our show. And I think that maybe you guys can comment on this pod odds thing, because maybe we got it wrong. Maybe you can tell us what's right and what's wrong. We'd love to get an audio file from you guys at 1-866-371-9605. Call us and berate us. Tell us, you know, what did we do? Why don't we know this properly? You know, did we not give a good example? Whatever, you know.
And remember to let us know what you do with your own home games, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm tired of losing money in the beginning and having a rally at the end just to win $4. Thank you very much. So, anyway, that's our show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.